Know your church fathers. Theophilus of Antioch lived a pagan lifestyle until he was converted by reading the scriptures. His most notable work, Apology, was written to an unbelieving friend to show that the scriptures were self-authenticating and argued that the antiquity, clarity, and consistency of the scriptures prove their divine origin. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
What kind of love is that? This is Wretched Radio. Question: who surrounds you? No, not like a ring of turkey vultures. Who lives near you? Who are your neighbors? How do you get along with people in the hood? Do you love them? Perhaps your answer is some of them. There's a few others. Don't talk very much, but maybe, just maybe, you live next to a very unlovable neighbor, and yet loving difficult neighbors isn't optional. When Jesus said that we are to love our neighbors as ourselves, he didn't say, except that guy, love all of them. Will Anderson, writing a helpful encouragement for us to always be loving neighbors. My neighbors are inconsiderate, you say, and they might be. That happens a lot, doesn't it? Is there any place you can actually go where neighbors don't bother you, especially if you happen to be persnickety? You go into one of those developments where there's an HOA, and there's all kinds of rules, but people still break them. And then, so you go, that's it, we're out of the HOA. We're going to buy a house on just in a neighborhood. And then there's always those people who don't keep the place up, bringing your property value down. I don't think you can go anywhere because somebody's going to get up your nose living on this planet. And we cannot use the excuse that my neighbors are inconsiderate. This from Will Anderson. Sometimes we disconnect from neighbors because they're rude. Loud music, parking in the wrong spot, smoking around the kids, using our lawn as their dog's daily bathroom, parenting in ways we wouldn't, donning a political yard sign or bumper sticker we despise. Wow. Did I write this list? This was reading me. I still have to love them. When we behold Christ's prayer of forgiveness for his executioners uttered from the cross, our pettiness vaporizes. It should. As sinners daily pardon from immense guilt, how could we stubbornly withhold forgiveness from others? You want to apply that to your neighbors? Your happiness will go up. You apply that to your marriage? Your relationship with your sweetie? It's going to get better. You apply that rule to your parenting or to being a child, and your relationship with your children or mom and dad, it's going to get sweeter. I promise you. It's just the way that it works. Right now, I actually decided I think I'm going to write another book, because as long as I'm still able to remember where my wallet is, where is my wallet, come to think of it? So I'm writing this book, and it's currently titled How the World Works and How You Fit Into It. I'm thinking about where you fit into it, you know, how, where. It's kind of an important thing at any rate. How the world works. Just as there are physical laws, I'm calling them spiritual laws. I need a better word than spiritual. So if you've got one, send me an email at idea@wretched.org and tell me what it is. The idea that God orchestrates and runs the planet the same way that he does with laws of physics, laws of biology, laws of nature, if you want to call them, laws of math, that he's the constant who stands behind all of these things, and it's the way that he's put the place together in an organized fashion in order for it to run as well as it currently does. And the same thing is true for life. How we live, God has laws. Pagan, doesn't matter. Christian, doesn't matter. You follow the way that God has designed the planet, and things are going to go better for you. Marriage is perhaps the best example. If you get married to somebody the opposite gender for the rest of your life, overall things are going to go better. And by the way, I think it's Dennis Prager, the Jewish talk show host, who regularly will say, in this country, if you get married, stay married, and get at least a high school education, and just work diligently, you will do just fine. And he's right. And that, by the way, that's sociological. You do those things and things are going to go better. Even the world, even Dennis Prager observes that. And it's true. But why is it true? Is it just, well, it just kind of works out? No. It's because that's the way that God designed you to live. Get married. Stay married. Get educated because God is educated. And work because God works. Do those things and things will improve and they will go overall well with the consideration of sovereignty, that God might be doing something a la Job in your life with discipline, because he's designed the universe to work with marriage because it's relational and he's relational, that we should be educated because he's smart, and that we should be faithful. Do those things, and they work because that's how the place works. Don't do them, and things do not go well for you. Don't go ahead. You want your life to be crummy and miserable? Dishonor your parents a lot until they just reach the breaking point with you. Go ahead and just see how well things go compared to how sweet they can be. Whoa. Why? Because God says, this is how you should treat your parents. And if you do, life will go well. It even says that in the command, that life will go well with you. Why? Because he's designed the place to run that way. Maybe you're asking, well, where are these laws of the spiritual laws, if we can call them that, where are they located? Where's the storehouse? And the answer is God. God runs everything. God is the power source behind everything. And just like he is behind the law of gravity, he's behind the law of get married and stay married. Just like he is the author of the laws of entropy, cause and effect, he's the law of honor your parents. You do it and it's going to work for you. I'll let you know when I get done with the book. You want your marriage to go better? Start repenting and start seeing yourself as the biggest sinner in the house. And I'm telling you something, you do sin math. Whoa. My spouse was kind of cold today. Mm-hmm. And how effusive were you with the Lord all day?
Well, that's not so much.
And you're upset at your spouse. Why? Do that. It'll change the way you treat your spouse. It'll change the way you see your neighbors when they park on your lawn. They've got their car on the curb, whatever it is. They don't pick up their clippings from their lawn, whatever it is. They don't clean their gutters. You can just see the leaves up there. Don't they? What's the matter with them? You know what property values are going to do? Okay. Hold on. How much have you been forgiven? Number two. My neighbors are not my primary ministry, you say. Therefore, I don't have to love them. Our geography is linked with God's sovereignty. Therefore, they are a ministry. Sometimes the doctrine of sovereignty can be a wee little bit convicting. Where you are is important. And don't lose sight of this, even as you're considering career decisions. Where have you been? What have you been doing? What has God led you through? What has he taught you? What opportunities do you have with it? That should not be discarded, especially on a whim. Or I'm just kind of tired of it. Hold on. God has put you someplace. Why? Do you know where you should be? Answer, where you are. How do I know? Because you're there. If you weren't supposed to be there, you wouldn't be there. Why? Because God has you exactly where he wants you to be. And that means the neighbors you've got are a ministry. You protest, my neighbors are different from me. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they certainly are. Jesus ignored the homogenous social rules of his day. dining with religious elites, scandalous sinners. His inner circle of disciples included a zealot, a tax collector, a traitor. Following Jesus will seat you at tables that make you squirm. But you say, my neighbors want to be left alone. Okay, perhaps. Is there anything kind that we could do to show love to our neighbors? Keep inviting them? Send them some banana bread on occasion? I bring that up only because I have some at home and banana bread. It's my one weakness. Number five, you say my neighbors are hostile. Mm-hmm. If a neighbor threatens you, you might want to call the police, file a report, install a motion light, an alarm system, or move to a new neighborhood if you need to. Those are sober realities, yet prayer for a hostile neighbor and self-protection aren't mutually exclusive. That means even if they're really that bad, that nasty, there's still things you can do that are kind of protect yourself, no doubt about it. But be praying for your neighbor and offering as much kindness as they will allow you to give. Why? Because loving our neighbor, it isn't an option, even if they're dreadful. This is Wretched Radio.
Hey, hey, thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. You know how everybody's always trying to sell you something? This is different. We're actually giving away more content than most ministries charge for. The Fortis Plus app, daily videos, podcasts, director's cuts, news, completely free. All of this happens because of gospel partners just like you. Our gospel partners are the ones that get it. They see what we're doing, standing firm on biblical truth, strengthening churches, and helping people think biblically about everything going on in our upside down world. And that's why we want to ask you, if you're not already a gospel partner, we would love for you to join us. Maybe you've been listening for a while, and maybe you're thinking someone should help keep this going. Well, that someone could be you. Would you pray about becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner? Just head over to FortisInstitute.org right now. That's FortisInstitute.org and get all of the answers to all of the questions you likely have about becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Perhaps you've been wondering, is there a Christian university that isn't woke? Or that hasn't compromised on important biblical doctrines like, you know, the age of the earth? There is. It's the Masters University in Southern California. Beautiful campus. All of the athletics and activities that you've come to expect from universities. But it's more than that. The academic programs are most excellent, preparing students for the future. The Washington Post just said, number six for preparing students for the real world. All that. Plus, the Masters University isn't woke, and it is thoroughly biblical. Would you like to learn more? I encourage you to visit the Masters University at masters.edu/wretched, masters.edu/wretched.
Hey, you want to hear something crazy? There is someone out there who wants to match your generosity dollar for dollar. Fortis Institute has received a $500,000 matching grant. That means every gift you give between now and December the 31st, it gets doubled. Let me break it down for you. If you give $75, it becomes $150. You send $300, it turns to $600. And if you're feeling ambitious, you make a $1,000 donation to Fortis Institute, suddenly you're making a $2,000 impact. It's like a buy one, get one deal, but instead of you getting another sweater you don't need, you help strengthen churches and equip believers with solid biblical teaching. And I know what you're thinking. What's the catch? Well, there are two. First, this offer ends December the 31st. Second, actually, that's it. That's the only catch. No hidden fees, no processing and handling. Just visit FortisInstitute.org. That's FortisInstitute.org and watch your gift do double duty, because in a world where everything seems to cost twice as much, isn't it nice to have something worth twice as much instead? FortisInstitute.org.
Attributes of God. Exodus chapter 20 verse 5 tells us that God is jealous. Jealousy is an intense desire to protect one's own glory, honor, and name. Since God is perfect, it is only right for him to protect his own glory. Take comfort knowing that God will receive glory, and His glory is good for you. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Well, here's a subtle sin for you. This is Wretched Radio. I'm your host, Todd Friel. Age?
You must be 30.
Close enough. I opened up my Stinger file and I found all kinds of goodies in here. Remember this guy from this was on Long Beach, something like that. I was trying to witness to this guy on a bench. He was smoking a cigar. He was having none of me.
I can't talk to you anymore. You have a wonderful day. I feel very sorry for you.
There you have it.
I so relate to him.
Oh, wow. The flashbacks. A unity. God likes it. God commands it. And we are to have it. Now, in order to have what God has in the Trinitarian Godhead, which is perfect unity, we need the best foundation. What is it? What is the thing that unites Christians? Believe it or not, there's actually debate on the subject because some people would say it's our cause, digging wells, feeding the poor. That's what unites us. Some would say, no, it's just that we fellowship together. We hang together. We do things together. That's the basis for our unity. That's a tenuous walk, by the way, because there ain't nothing keeping you from fighting with your former friends and not having unity. Instead, Martin Lloyd-Jones rightly stated, and I'll just play that tape for you. The basis of our unity must be doctrine, not fellowship. That's what he said. It's got to be doctrine. It is absolutely got to be doctrine. As long as I've got my stinger up with Martin Lloyd-Jones. The next unique feature of the gathering of people who are the church is the common life they share. They have a love of the same doctrine always. This love of the same doctrine always precedes fellowship. True unity in the church is a unity of life and unity of life. Martin Lloyd-Jones seems to be losing his accent. And unity of life is expressed with a unity of doctrine. A man who is born again is a man who wants teaching. You did a nice job cleaning up those sound files, Jimmy. As you can hardly tell, they're like 50 years old. Any attempt to create an external unity that downplays or disregards a doctrine is not the unity described in the New Testament. Bible is the foundation of our unity, which Jesus insists on. Now, for your consideration, courtesy of, oh boy, here we go, Tom Hammond, the author of What Time is Purple, which you can still give away. Visit wretched.org/purple. We'll send you copies of this booklet. No cost, as long as you promise to give them away. And by the way, speaking of booklet giveaways, get ready for September because we're going to have a Lulu coming up. And I would like to encourage you to think about where you might be able to give away the gospel. Tom Hammond creating 6 elements that are usually found where biblical unity is lacking. We'll get to the where it abounds, but right now, this could be a reason why your church isn't a happy place. It's perhaps a little bit divided. 1, there's usually inconsistent teaching that begets dissimilar beliefs. This always results in biblical ignorance and makes like-mindedness virtually impossible. Unity has got to be based on truth and lots of it. Otherwise, it's tenuous. How's the teaching at your church? 2, there is often the inclusion of persistent, unrepented immorality and sin. If your church is lacking unity, it's because people have a low view of God and a low view of holiness and a low level of worship. The lost and those living in persistent sin feel very comfortable in ecumenical settings, not in a unified, theologically robust church. 3, you could have disunity in your church because there is a neglectful inclusion of false converts that results from weak evangelism. That is, Evangelism will do more for your church than I think most of us realize. It can ignite a church, and it can bring a body together like a nobody's business, because we all want to see the lost saved. And when we're constantly hearing about it, activities, efforts, outreaches, reports, good news, testimonies, that brings us together because we are on common cause, and not just a cause, the cause. The cause of God is to bring glory to himself through the redemptive work of his son, the Lord Jesus Christ. That's the cause. That's the reason for the universe. You and I in a local body participating in that purpose. And then we're going to feel it, and we're going to be unified. But there might be another reason your church is lacking unity. There's a neglectful inclusion of false teaching. That's not going to help anything. And by the way, false teaching these days, sometimes, not as potently, but sometimes is unspoken, because certain things are never discussed. Certain topics are never tackled. Certain subjects are taboo. That can be false teaching too. Okay, not unorthodox like false teaching, but neglectful. It doesn't grow unity. It diminishes unity. Number five, there's an exclusion of church discipline and admonishment. This shouldn't be an every Sunday sort of affair, but on occasion, there should be some church discipline. Somebody's got to be demonstrating that they're a false convert, because we were promised we're going to have them in our midst. Hence, church discipline. Does your church ever have it? If it doesn't, you're not going to grow in unity. I'm telling you, I have been in some service, not many, but I've been in some services. When you're sitting in a room with, say, 200 people who are all shaking because it has just been announced that this person is not repenting, and we are setting them outside of the body, you do that all together and you're going to be all together. Number six, there is weak leadership that fails to address these causes of disunity. They just don't want to take on the challenge. Well, guess what? It's not going to go away, because we are bent toward disunity. We need to be called toward unity. Those are the six things that promote a lack thereof. Here are the six causes that bring about an abounding of biblical unity. Number one, consistent teaching from a common hermeneutic that begets similar beliefs. Make sure you know what your hermeneutic is, because if it isn't defined by the church, specifically by the pastor who's rightly dividing the word of church or truth, or should be at least, then you get the hermeneutic of your pastor, and you don't want that. No man should bring about his own understanding of interpretation. We all submit to grammatical, historical. What's the grammar? What's the history? What's the context? What is the author's intent? Then I try to figure that out and do what I'm told as it applies to me. I don't determine what the Bible says. God does. The original author does. If that isn't in agreement, you're in trouble. If it is, you're going to grow in unity, because you're all going to be on the same page theologically. Number two, abounding biblical unity comes from an intentional exclusion of unrepented immorality and sin. As you can see, these are going the negative of the ones that cause disunity to take place. Number three, there's an international exclusion of There's an intentional exclusion of false converts, but a strong emphasis on evangelism. Four, there's an intentional exclusion of false teaching. Five, there is church discipline and admonishment. Six, there's strong leadership that upholds the elements of unity. Pastor, we need you strong, not overbearing, not dictatorial, but we need you strong. We all do. We all want it that way. And by the way, the bullies in the church that would try to intimidate you to not be strong, they're just that. And they're immature, and they're the ones who need to change, not you. Be loving, be strong. It brings about unity. Here's three attitudes that will destroy unity. One, an attitude of individualism, which you and your kids are bombarded with the message that you are alone, alone, all alone, not on a alone, alone, all alone, alone on a Samuel Taylor Coleridge, alone, all. Look, sometimes you need to work things out too, okay? If I don't do this now, it'll be 3 a.m. I'm going to wake up spouting Samuel Taylor Coleridge. The rhyme of the ancient mariner, alone, all alone, alone on a wide, wide sea, and never did a saint take pity on my soul in agony. Thank you, I feel better now. If you think that you're alone in everything, you're not going to be unified, and you're missing out. An attitude of selfishness, that you've got to have things at the church, family, life, your way. No unity. Homes are broken up over this. Everybody insisting on their own way. Nobody ever submitting. Nobody ever giving in. An attitude of prideful egotism, where there's envy and there's jealousy. You are going to have nothing but squabbling. Instead, we should have an attitude of submission, unselfishness, and humility. Now, see, you can tell Tom's from Tennessee. He used the word humbleness. I don't think that's a word. It used to be humility. Where did humbleness come from? He's just wrong.
It comes from West Tennessee.
Apparently. And now he and I can't have unity with my attitude being like this. The Lord loves unity. If it's never a topic of conversation in your church, it should be. Because if nothing else, you're just missing out on something super sweet. Until tomorrow, go serve your King.